always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday afternoon by you guys. Riding solo for this one because we have a few headlines that I want to run through, and I don't want to bug people as people embark on vacations and stuff like that. So went ahead. Riding solo this one, gonna talk about Matisse Thybulle. We're gonna talk about what appears to be Rob Pelinka's plan for the rest of the summer, as far as transactions go. I don't know what Rob's post off season summer plans might be, probably Disneyland, who knows. We will talk also about how likely those plans seem to be and what might be holding them up. And then we will run through both the Lakers' current and hypothetical depth charts to just kind of discuss and go through what's on the line as the Lakers hopefully wrap up what is left of this offseason in productive manner. Obviously, over the course of the show, hit me with questions and comments and topics and stuff there in the chat. And I will get to as many of those as I can. I see Jeremy Morata is already in here. Ayo to you as well on this fine Thursday. A reminder before we dive on in, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. If you guys are listening to the show in podcast form, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is fine with me. Kingston, you know what? We'll give you an AO shout out as well. AO. My daughter says AO. And I was like, huh. She called me bruh the other day too. And gotta say, don't love that. Let's go ahead and get things started. All right. So let's start with the biggest news, right, was LeBron James at FanFest, you know, giving his answers that weren't necessarily answers, didn't give any clarity on where he is going. I would imagine that will be something that is on a LeBron exclusive platform, whether, you know, whatever that might be. But yeah, he, you know, gave a shout out to the Lakers, thanked the Lakers for the 8 years that he spent there. He talked about how he is not going to hold this up for too much longer. So hopefully, you know, he's talking about next week sometime. But yeah, I get the sense that the decision is made and it's just a matter of executing his decision and maximizing the earning potential of the actual announcement. You know, it's just very LeBron the way that all of this is going down. Not saying that as a knock, just pointing it out as objective fact. This dude likes this attention and he understands that this attention can be monetized. And I think no matter what it is that he does here to, you know, or whatever his decision might be, it's already, I believe, made and it is going to be monetized one way or another. Now, and like, look, to LeBron's, I guess, in his defense to a certain extent, it's going to be monetized regardless, right? Like, we're going to talk about it on the show. Several podcasts are going to talk about it on their shows, ESPN, Fox, like all these other, you know, platforms are going to talk about it and they're going to benefit from it. So he's saying, why shouldn't he get the first bite at that apple? And I kind of understand it. I forgot to mention it earlier as far as monetizing stuff goes. Please, you know, check out Prize Picks. Go to Prize Picks. There's a link in the description below for our specific Prize Picks setup. If you use that promo code HMA, you can get $50 worth of Prize Picks lineups. When you sign up, use that code. And I'm laughing at myself because of the timing of all this. Sign up, use that code, and set a $5 lineup of your own. But yeah, like the you know, LeBron's decision here is holding basically the rest of the league up, because at this stage of the offseason, he is the, you know, biggest chessboard on the table right now, who could be available or is available. And I would imagine once LeBron makes his, you know, formal decision, you will start to see the chess pieces move around the board as such. Starting with, you know, in the Lakers' case, their efforts to get more athletic on the peripheries of the roster. And one target, according to Mark Stein of the Stein Line, and also of All City. I'm going to give those guys a shout out because I bumped into Adam over the weekend and he's a good friend of mine. But yeah, Mark Stein is reporting that the Lakers have interest in Matisse Thybul. He is somebody that we have talked about here on this show plenty, and I can confirm that interest. Not that Mark Stein needs my confirmation, but yeah, it's a he's an interesting player here. Unfortunately, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. There were some shenanigans going on at various points in his Blazers tenure, but Matisse Thybul is a really interesting player. He can knock down threes. He has actually really improved at that over the course of his career. He is a absolutely tenacious defender, is Thybul, especially on the perimeter. Somebody who plays with a lot of effort. Sometimes that effort and that that motor will sometimes get him into trouble in terms of his availability. I think he only played like 40 something games last year. He's a veteran minimum signing. So if the Lakers do walk away with Thybul and they do trade for Jonathan Kuminga and they do, you know, either, you know, maybe convert Magnon to a regular season contract. Now, all of a sudden, you know, between those guys and what we've seen from Adu Thiro and what we've seen from Cam Carr, now all of a sudden there is a little bit of athletic pop on this roster. And again, we'll talk about the hypothetical depth chart later in the show, but the interest in Thybul is really interesting and good to hear. He was somebody I was hoping would be linked to the Lakers. He was somebody who, you know, I spoke to while I was in spoke about while I was in Vegas at length and in a few different conversations, hoping that there would be eventual interest there. And here we arrive. So this doesn't always necessarily mean that the Lakers are going to land Thybul. Although this does feel kind of like one of those formalities that are waiting on different outcomes before we actually see the specifics of this eventual signing. But yeah, this is good news. Thybul is a perfectly solid veteran minimum addition, especially for a team that is hurting for perimeter defense and athleticism and just kind of two-way talent to the extent that the Lakers are. In yesterday's show, I talked a lot about how the Lakers' summer league roster really kind of lends itself to filling in the gaps in the Lakers' actual roster. Talked about how, you know, you have athletes like Adu Thiro and Cam Carr and, you know, to a different extent, Arthur Kuluma and Chris Magnon, right? Like you have these guys who do things that the guys on the actual roster right now don't necessarily provide. And I think that the same is kind of said about the final couple names that the Lakers are looking to add, whether that be Thybul, as we just talked about a second ago, but also Jonathan Kuminga, right? And we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, you're looking at a Lakers front office that, as we've talked about a lot, is very aware of some of the deficiencies that, you know, this roster has as it is currently constructed. I don't think it will enter the season as it is currently constructed. But at the end of the day, too, like, you need teams to play ball, realistically speaking. And the Lakers, I don't think, want to give up multiple second round picks to sign Jonathan Kuminga. I don't think they want to give away, like, or they don't want to send like Jake LaRavia to Atlanta and also give up picks. The way that I kind of put it in Discord, in the Lounge Discord, was that it sounds to me like the Hawks are basically asking for one too many second round picks than the Lakers are comfortable with in basically every scenario. So if it's Jaden Hardy and Dalton Knecht going to Atlanta, and Atlanta is saying they want two second rounders in that hypothetical or that scenario, and the Lakers, if they did head down that path, only want to give up one second rounder. And then, you know, if it is, again, like I said, LaRavia, who goes to Atlanta, the Lakers only don't want to give up any second rounders. That guy played 82 games for them last year. You're giving up a rotation player for Jonathan Kuminga, who has questions as well. And so the Lakers are saying, like, no, like you'll get Jake LaRavia and you'll be happy with it. And Atlanta, to that point, is saying, no, you won't get Jonathan Kuminga and you won't like it. And so I think that's basically where the holdup is right now. I think Kuminga and the Lakers have a ballpark of, you know, a figure that they would, they've kind of both agreed on, roughly speaking. I think that, the Lakers and Kuminga have an understanding, to the extent that they can, of like the length of a hypothetical contract. The holdup right now seems to be Atlanta, and their aspect, their part in all of this, asking for one too many assets than the Lakers are willing to give up for the opportunity to sign Jonathan Kuminga. So we'll see how this plays out. You know, this is, I tweeted out that gif of The Office where they're all kind of pointing at each other with their finger guns. I think that is where things kind of stand right now. But if that does come to fruition, I think that is step one. Well, all right, technically step one is LeBron, right? Step one is LeBron makes his decision, and especially if he goes to Cleveland, now Kuminga really doesn't have much of a market outside of returning to Atlanta on a small deal or hoping that the Lakers and Atlanta can work out a trade so that he can sign in LA on a bigger deal. He could just threaten Atlanta and say, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go and sign with the Lakers on a minimum and you won't get anything. But he doesn't want to do that, and his camp definitely doesn't want to do that. The Lakers at, you know, various points could have just waved and stretched Jared Vanderbilt. But I thought Pete did a really good job of outlining what the Lakers are trying to do over the next few years, which is get as close to that second apron as they possibly can. And you can't get very close to the second apron in a couple of years if you do the majority of your work as a cap space team, you know, the couple of years prior. So I think I know Peter Schmidtke, like I just said, he's not taking a minimum. But yeah, I think that with sorry. I get annoyed when I just, you guys have one job. I talk, you listen. I say, I don't think Jonathan Kuminga is taking a minimum. You hear that through your ears. And if you type out, LOL, he's not taking a minimum. It's like, I know. You're not breaking any news to me. Anyway, the thing that you know, with the Lakers and Kuminga and this entire situation is if LeBron signs in Cleveland, which I think he is going to. I think LeBron, if he does go through all of this rigmarole and like at the end of all of it doesn't sign in Cleveland, I mean, I don't think he cares about it being a tough look or whatever, but like, it's a really funny final chapter with his relationship to his home city and his home state. But regardless, I think he signs in Cleveland. And then I think that, you know, Jonathan Kuminga then has two options between the Lakers and the Hawks. I saw some people say that Kuminga, you know, will go to whatever team that LeBron doesn't sign in. Well, one of the teams that LeBron wouldn't be signing with would be the Warriors. And I don't think Kuminga has that as an option. So like I would imagine, and I, you know, the Heat can't afford him. So I think it does come down in that situation to the Lakers and the Hawks, and the Lakers are more open to paying Kuminga more than the Hawks are. And at that point, it's just a matter of finding a trade with the Hawks that would land Kuminga from Atlanta. Now, so step one, LeBron signs in Cleveland. Step two, trade for Kuminga. Step three, or maybe step 2A, would be, you know, checking in with Cleveland to see if they are interested enough in Bronny to send over a second round pick. If that, like one thing I you know, Dan Wojcicki, I saw reported the other day that the Lakers aren't just going to dump Bronny or just send him to whatever team for free. Can confirm. Again, not that Dan Wojcicki needs my confirmation, but the Lakers essentially are aware of Bronny's value to whatever team brings in Bron. I did see a funny quote from LeBron on a different FanFest pod where I think he was talking to Zach Kleiman, and he was saying he called Bronny a former teammate, which, and he did say it was funny, and he was right. It was funny. I think that the hypothetical there of Bronny and LeBron just being reunited and the Lakers allowing for that to happen without getting anything in return for Bronny, somebody that they used a whole roster spot on multiple years, and somebody who they have watched very closely over his development, and somebody who Bronny has gotten legitimately better in his time in the league. And I think the Lakers would like to benefit from that development and the resources that they put into developing Bronny. I don't think that it is a given that Bronny just goes to whatever city LeBron signs with for nothing. Now, if Cleveland, in an effort to like make good with LeBron there, says, hey, Lakers, what if we just give you cash and a second round pick or something like that, or you know, trade you some guy at the end of our roster who you could, I guess, waive, and you know, we give you that second round pick, then the Lakers, I think, would listen, and I think something would get done in that manner. But for right now, you know, I think that just kind of penciling Bronny's roster spot as open for the taking, don't necessarily think it plays out that way. So what the Lakers would look to do is make a 2-for-1 trade for Jonathan Kuminga. We've talked a lot about the Jaden Hardy Dalton Connect option here. And if they do that, then you're sending over a second round pick, maybe a pick and a swap. But that way you get Kuminga, you open up a roster spot, that roster spot goes to Thybul. And in this hypothetical, Magnon doesn't get converted to a parent team deal, but that can be something you do eventually later in the season. After you find some other consolidation trade or you waive somebody else, you also still have the Dalton Connect roster spot. So it could be, Hardy and Connect would be one thing that you could do. I don't like, you know, Pete again made that case in his pod yesterday that I think is accurate, that, you know, the Lakers would hold on to Vando and hold on to that cap slot, for the entirety of that contract so that it can be eventually traded as an expiring, And that way you if you waive and stretch him, that cap slot goes away and just sits on your books at $5 million per, without getting anything for that player, or for, you know, no player on your books for $5 million. Whereas if you hold on to Vando beyond this season, I think he has this year and then a player option, or maybe this year, next year, and a player option. It that contract gets longer every time I look at it, so I'm not going to look it up on SportTrack. But yeah, like that seems to be the plan. And in that case, the Lakers, you know, depth chart, if it is the Hardy Dalton for Kuminga eventual trade, it's an intriguing depth chart that, you know, I still have some questions about, but yeah, at the end of the day, like it could be way worse. So let's go through this really quick. And I should have made a graphic. My bad. I think that it'll be the starters next season. And we're operating under the assumption or under the premise that Rob was able to execute these final plans, right? So Bron signs in Cleveland, Lakers trade for Kuminga, a decision on Bronny gets made. You use one of those, you use the roster spot that you opened by landing Kuminga on Matisse Thybulle. And, you know, if you really want to get technical here, you waive Peter Suter and you use that two-way spot on Arthur Kaluma. All right. So that's your depth chart. This depth chart that I'm putting together is with the premise being all of that was able to get done. So your starters next season would be Quentin Grimes, Austin Reeves, Luka Doncic, Jonathan Kuminga, and Walker Kessler. Pretty good lineup. Solid rebounding at obviously at center. Kuminga isn't the rebounder that I think many wish he would be, but maybe he gets better at that. Luka is a very good rebounder for his position. Austin is a very good rebounder for his position, and Grimes is like a neutral rebounder. He would be in this case a big point guard. So in that sense, maybe that helps you in terms of net rebounding ability across that lineup. That unit can get out and run. That unit can run pick and rolls about as well as anybody in the league. And between Grimes and Austin, as now I'm from what I've heard, Austin is really focusing on catch and shoot stuff this summer. So hopefully if he gets better at that, Grimes is already a good catch and shoot player. You know, the offense should be perfectly fine. The defense, I do have some concerns about the perimeter defense. Walker Kessler will be a very busy man in this lineup, defensively, but, overall, I think, you know, that would be like a second tier starting lineup. And I think would kind of average out by the end of the season as like, you know, one of the, like a top 10 to 15, in terms of net rating, lineup in the league next year. So, that's an interesting group. Your bench, you know, you have Colin Sexton coming off of the bench. You have, Mamu coming off of the bench. Nice thing about Mamu is he can come in off of the bench for either Walker Kessler or Jonathan Kuminga. If he comes in for Kuminga, now that team is huge, albeit slower, but huge. If he comes in for Walker Kessler, now you're playing five out with some real athletes out there. So that gets intriguing. So you have Colin Sexton coming off of the bench. In this hypothetical, you have Matisse Thybulle coming off of the bench, for one of the wings, right? You have, let's see, you have Jake LaRavia, in this hypothetical coming off of the bench for the other wing. And then, so you have Sexton, Thybulle, LaRavia, one of Luka and Austin. I think those guys will be staggered, but if you want to do like an all bench lineup, I think Cam Carr is going to figure into, like, by the time we get to like midway through the season, I think Cam Carr is going to be making a real push for minutes with this second unit. But let's see, who else would you have there? Who am I forgetting? Sexton, Thybul, Laravia, Mamu, and I guess Looney. The Looney part of it is still not very, very intriguing. I wish I liked Looney a lot more, but he's a veteran minimum center. And then you have, I guess Zaire Williams. So if you really want to fly out there, and you could swap Zaire Williams for Looney, and that group just gets up and down the court like crazy. And in all likelihood, Looney gets some spot minutes in there just for the sake of rebounding and stuff like that. Williams, I think, will be in like third units. I think Vando will be in third units. You have like potentially Bronny or Cam Carr, especially early in the season, is going to be in some third units. Meaning like the final five of the roster. And then, you know, you just kind of round it out and you have, you know, guys staggering. And I think one thing JJ Redick is going to be looking to do a lot next season is go with like a 10 to 12 man rotation that has like 13 or 14 players he would be comfortable playing. So like that is why I think Vando is going to matter. I think that is why the one thing on this front, and this goes for Thybul, this goes for Kuminga, this goes for Vando and Jake, I guess too. But like for Vando especially, if he is out there and like he's playing alongside Mamu, like I would really like to see those lineups. And if he's playing in a lineup with, say, like Grimes, Luka, Vando, Mamu, and you know, pick your extra wing, right? If you want to say like Laravia or Williams or somebody like that. Like there's enough shooting on this team. My point being that there's enough shooting that I think Vando should still be able to get spot minutes against some guys that you're just looking for him to lock up and or get out of a rhythm or something like that. So I do expect that. Yeah, Cam Carr could also fit into that group, right? So you could go with like Grimes, Carr, Vando, Luka, Mamu. And now all of a sudden you have like a whole bunch of shooting. Vando is the only guy that, can't shoot out there or wouldn't be able to shoot in that lineup. And I would like to see him used as kind of a fulcrum in that offense. But worst comes to worst, you could use him as a shooter. You could use him as a nuisance defensively. And then you could just get out and run. And I think that's something that Vando could help you do. So, I expect Vando will be on the team next season. And I think that if they use him correctly and if they build lineups correctly around him, that the Lakers will be better positioned to get more from Vando next season than they have been the last couple of seasons. I don't think it's a coincidence that some of the best lineups that Vando played in were alongside Rui, who was like a bona fide sniper. And I think that's kind of what you have to do here is you have to have it so that Vando is the only player out there on the court who defenses don't have to worry about shooting. And you can do that, right? Whether it's, you know, those that combination of players that we talked about a second ago, you could do it with, you know, you basically just make it, like Vando gets swapped out for Kuminga if Kuminga's hurt or something like that. I truly believe I don't expect that Jared is going to be like a big part of the rotation next year, but I do think that in those minutes that he is out there, JJ can more comfortably play him than he was, you know, than he was than the comfort level that he had playing Vando last season. So. Yeah, I think that, let me know what you guys think about that depth chart. Again, it's a moving target where we still actually have to see how this offseason plays out. That is how I th- think it's going to play out. And that, I think, is how the Lakers would like to see it play out. But end of the day, people have to make decisions, and you have to, like in the case of a trade with Atlanta, they have to agree to that trade. You know, Thibault has to pick the Lakers, you know, seeing as he's a free agent. Yeah, I think what it all comes down to, though, is that is seems to be what the Lakers are hoping to accomplish. And now it's just a matter of seeing if, you know what, Adu is a good, I forgot Adu. My bad. Adu is interesting. Everything that I just said about Vando, you can apply to Adu, though. Right. Like I if Adu is the only non-shooter on a court, and if you've been watching in summer league, he is not a shooter. I think he is better around the rim than Vando. He's a lot more physical a finisher, obviously, than Vando. He is more physical a finisher than almost anybody in the league already. But like everything that I basically said about Vando, I don't think Adu has the passing instincts that Vanderbilt has. He has some passing chops, but I don't think he's quite the facilitator that Jared Vanderbilt is. But at end of the day, though, like if you basically, you know, swap Adu for Kuminga in that, not that he would start, but I'm saying in a lineup that looks like that, that's how you basically have to build a lineup around him. Or if it's like Sexton and Grimes and Luka and Adu and Mamu, like that is kind of a general idea of what a lineup could look like out there, right? Sexton is like a pretty good 3-point shooter. Grimes is a really good 3-point shooter. Luka is Luka, and then Mamu can space the floor from the five spot. So that means that now you have Adu Thiro, who is the only guy that defenses don't have to like rush towards when he is open from three. So, I think the, you know, whether it's Adu, whether it's Zaire Williams, whether it's Vando, whether it's Jake, in those moments that he loses confidence in his shooting, like the Lakers have enough shooting from the rest of their roster that if some of their wings go cold, it doesn't cripple your offense. And I think that's basically the premise of a lot of the early moves that the Lakers made. But yeah, I just need to see this actually play out. Like we need to see LeBron make his formal decision, and then we need to see how the Lakers carry out the rest of their roster. All right, let's go ahead and dive into some of your guys' questions and comments. We do have a super comment, which means we get to play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! All right, so the question here comes from Let's Run UNLV. Seems like the projected 45 win total has a lot to do with Luka's injury issues, which are kind of like Giannis. Also, Kessler is a big question mark. I still say, like, obviously, knock on wood, I don't want to see Luka get hurt. And I do think this team would be in some trouble if Luka got hurt. Any team would be in trouble if their best player got hurt. But I like if Luka misses like a week here, a week there with a tweak or whatever, something like that, a technical foul suspension, like, if something like that happens, I actually think the Lakers have enough creativity to like tread water. Austin has shown that he is fine in some spots as a primary creator. You have Colin Sexton, who can actually break down the defense. I've been pretty hard on the Sexton signing. One thing I am looking forward to is Sexton having the ability to just get by guys without needing a pick. That is something that the Lakers offense has really missed over the last couple of years. I think that Walker Kessler is somebody who, if Luka is out, the hope is that Walker Kessler can operate as kind of a fulcrum on the interior, either at the pinch post or at the high post or, you know, at the elbow or whatever. And so that's something that you could do with the offense. And then I think if Luka is out, then the Lakers just become a running team. Like they defend harder, they get more stops, hopefully, and they just run. And you rely on Jonathan Kuminga getting down the court. You rely on Zaire Williams and Jared Vanderbilt and Cam Carr and Adu Thiro, and just go at teams in waves on in transition. And Colin Sexton, I think, can help with this stuff. Austin Reeves is a very good hit-ahead passer. So that's something that I think the Lakers would really kind of rely on there. That's a one thing that, like, or one of the things that, one of the other reasons that I'm not really that interested in, I wasn't all that pumped about Kevon Looney, was because he's just not very fast. But like the hope there is that, you know, you have enough running. Looney gets the rebound. He gets, you know, he makes the outlet pass, outlet turns into a hit ahead, and you get out and run. And I think that if Luka misses like 40 games, then yeah, like the Lakers aren't winning 45. But if Luka misses, you know, 10, 15 games here and there, then I don't think that changes my projected win total all that much. I think 45 is really low for the Lakers. Really, really low. So if you can get in on over, under, or more or less than 45 wins wherever you can find it, then I think that's a very solid bet. I don't think it's the kind of thing that, like, I would put Avery's college fund on. I don't think I wouldn't put a pink slip on it, but I would pretty confidently bet that the Lakers, because like this offense is going to be overwhelming. I have questions about this team in the postseason because of the defense. I do think it's a real gamble that the Lakers have essentially allocated like end of roster resources to perimeter defense, athleticism, two-way play. But at the end of the day, though, like, regular season win totals are amassed by beating the teams that you should beat. And the teams that the Lakers should beat aren't going to be able to deal with this offense on a night-by-night basis if they don't have, you know, an entire week to prep for this offense. I have my questions about this team and this roster, and I don't agree with, like, Rob Pelinka's basketball outlook and his kind of general ideologies. But one thing I do agree with him on, and with the people who built this roster about, is, all right, we're going to, you know, if the point is to just rely heavily on offense to get you through the regular season and then have just enough defense, then this team is definitely built to do that. And we'll see. Like, I think they are pushing the limits as far as like how little defense a contender can have. And I do think this is a multi-year project, even though we were told it was going to be a single offseason project. As part of this multi-year project to reinvigorate the Lakers and fully commit to building around Luka, I think that, like, this team is going to churn out wins. Like, I'm very confident this team is going to win its division. I'm very confident this team is going to, you know, sit right around 50 to 55 wins, just like they have the last couple of years. And now, like, it would suck if they don't get Kuminga, and it would suck if they don't get Thybul. Like, that certainly, like, as currently constructed, 45 becomes a little shakier bet. But I would be pretty surprised if this was the final roster. I would be surprised and disappointed if this was the final roster that we saw on opening night. All right, the next question here, just got it a second ago, came from Intel is Wild, Fuck Boston. You know what? I'll play it again. I'll play it as much as you guys want. Fuck Boston! This is a funny one. So, Pamela Pamela Allen writes, you positive today. What? It's possible. Now, historically, if I start talking optimistically and I start talking positively, something bad happens. So I'm not going to get carried away here, just for the sake of everybody listening. But look, I still think it's a gamble. I truly, truly do that the Lakers have basically said we're going to fix our lack of athleticism and our lack of perimeter defense by way of like Adoo Thiro and Zaire Williams and Matisse Thybulle, who hasn't been able to stay healthy, and Jonathan Kuminga, who hasn't really committed to playing defense. Like, that is concerning to me. However, if the point, like, I'm not as low on the Lakers as people are going to be nationally, but I'm also not going to sit here and say, yeah, this team's going to win a championship. I don't think they're close to a championship. I don't think they're closer to a championship now than they were the last time we saw this team. I think losing LeBron is going to really sting, and I think people have completely taken for granted what LeBron brings to the table. And fortunately, it looks like he's heading east, and fortunately, it looks like the Lakers aren't going to have to deal with him four times over the course of a season. But those couple of games that the Lakers are going to have to deal with him, like, I think Lakers fans then are going to remember, oh shit, that's right, playing against LeBron sucks. It's a lot worse than having LeBron on your team. So, overall, like, my number one concern about this team was its athleticism, its perimeter defense, its physicality, its toughness. And to whatever extent that they could, with the resources that they have at their disposal, this plan that has become pretty clear in the last 48 hours or so addresses some of that, or at least starts to address it. So we'll kind of see what comes of the gamble that the Lakers are making, because it is addressing it, but it's addressing it with a gamble. It's like, all right, this is kind of a dark analogy, but let's say hypothetically that you are going to come up just a little short on rent in a given month, right? And as a last-ditch effort to pay those bills and not miss your rent check, or, you know, not have your credit dinged or whatever, you go to a casino and you basically say, like, all right, I'm going to, like, I'm my rent is $2,000 and I currently have, you know, $1,750 in my bank account right now. I'm not going to bet at all, but I'll go ahead and put like $250 on black and hope for the best. That's essentially what the Lakers feel like they're doing with the perimeter defense and the athleticism and the physicality and the stuff that they are doing by acquiring Jonathan Kuminga, by being interested in Matisse Thybulle, and by planning on Adoo Thiro popping, and by keeping Jared Vanderbilt on the roster, and by really believing that Cam Carr is going to pop this season, even as a rookie. So this feels like a bit of a gamble. I'm not necessarily all that comfortable with gambling with rent on the line, but I also don't know how many other options the Lakers have right now. They don't. They really don't have any more options. You don't have any more shifts to pick up. You just got to hope for the best when you put those $250 on black. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go. Oh, this is a funny question, or fun question. Ronald McPaul asks, I don't understand why the Lakers summer league team is so good. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, probably. His nickname, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, to me, isn't my favorite Avila nickname, Robbie Avila nickname. My favorite one is Larry Nerd. It is so good. Like, it is legitimately good. when I saw that one, I saw Kobe Price wrote a piece where he like had Robbie like rank his I'm gonna have to have Kobe on the show. He's been doing good work. But the Larry Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal is also good. But those nicknames have been incredible. It's nice that he has a sense of humor about them. That wasn't the premise of the question. Somebody asked why the Lakers, here we go. Ronald was asking why the Lakers summer league team is good. So I have a theory on it. And it's that it starts with their defense. Shocking. I know that I would have this stats because of how much emphasis I have placed on bigger, stronger, faster defense, all that stuff the last couple of weeks or so. But in summer league specifically, you have there's a style of play where it's basically just like AAU ball or pickup ball, you know, where there are some sets being run. There are some systems being run. There are some systems being adhered to offensively, but for the most part, like the focus on offense is a lot greater than the focus on defense, because vast majority of the guys who were playing in summer league are trying to prove that they're trying to stamp a ticket to the NBA. Right. And so, the Lakers summer league team has focused heavily on defense. Watch those dudes defend. And they get after it. They're up in players' jerseys. They hand check like crazy. They just suffocate teams, and then they get out and run, and they make up for their lack of on-ball creativity by way of taking advantage of turnovers and long rebounds and stuff like that. And that they've just overwhelmed teams to the extent that they are just a really good summer league team. I think there's Magnon is a big part of this too. Yep, absolutely. And so like the summer Lakers, right? I think they have a real shot at winning this thing. Eventually they're going to play a team that can handle their pressure a little bit better than some of the teams they've beaten so far. But I've really enjoyed it. And I just think it speaks to the value. Defense is a whole half of the sport, and for some reason we ignore it. Like I remember getting in a debate with people I truly respect about Michael Cooper, and when he made the Hall of Fame, when the Lakers retired his jersey, people I truly respect were like, I just don't know if you can like retire Michael Cooper's jersey given the high bar that exists for Lakers players whose jerseys have been retired. And I was like, if Vinnie Johnson, the microwave, can get his jersey retired in Boston and he can be a Hall of Famer for what he did as an offensive weapon, why can't Michael Cooper then get the same kind of credit for what he did on the defensive side of the ball? Like, why are offensive weapons more valuable than defensive weapons? And eventually, I think we agreed to disagree, but like Cooper is a Hall of Famer. His jersey is retired. And when you talk to players, especially his teammates and stuff, about those decisions to make him a Hall of Famer, to retire his jersey, all of them say, we don't win as much as we did without Michael Cooper, which is the whole point. And that's why I care so much about defense and physicality and get up in your grill and just work you into oblivion. Like that kind of stuff really matters. And we're watching it from this summer league Lakers team. We watched it in 2019, 2020. When you can just break a team's will with your defense, it's really difficult like to come back from that. And the Lakers summer league team is just, it's legitimately fun to watch them defend. I look forward to their games every time they're on. All right. We'll go to a couple more questions here. I'm doing this a little early. So, let's see. Schmicky, can the Lakers add Kuminga for more than a minimum? He's def not signing for a minimum contract. Whoever doesn't get Bronny will snag him. So went through this plenty with Kuminga, but the plan is to acquire him via sign and trade. Nobody's getting him for the minimum. I don't really have anything else to add there. Trade Vando and Connect plus a pick swap in a second opens a roster spot. So the Vando thing, again, they want to keep that cap slot open as long as they can so that it can be converted into a more stable player, more consistent player in the next couple of years and help them get right up to the second apron by the time this entire like multi-year pursuit of a championship comes to fruition. And so like Vando, look, I have my questions about him too. I have my frustrations about him too, but he is a lot more valuable to the Lakers than just attaching something to dump his contract or getting off of him and Connect. Connect is different because his contract is only $5 million. But Vando is somebody who I would like to see them try to utilize this season with proper spacing around him now. And he is somebody whose contract is a lot more valuable as the Lakers look to inflate their cap number than like just getting him off of the books. Like the days of just getting guys off the books, I think, are pretty much behind the Lakers now. Now, when you are up against various aprons, then at that point it does become important that every dollar is accounted for and goes to a player who is more useful or more consistently useful than Jared Vanderbilt. This is where I would like to see growth from JJ Redick so that he can actually get more out of Vando. Because I it wouldn't have shocked me if the Lakers had traded him and some team got more, especially in the regular season, than the Lakers have gotten from Jared Vanderbilt. Like I don't think he is not an NBA player. I think he is definitely an NBA player. He is somebody who should be able to help you on a night-by-night basis in the NBA. But you also can't like close your eyes and hope that he works it out there. Like, no, you have to actually kind of scheme for some of his deficiencies offensively. And you know, the Lakers have enough offensive creativity to be able to do that, both in terms of their on-court product and also in terms of their, you know, hopefully their coaching staff, you know, can, you know, get a little bit better in this specific regard. Cause if it isn't Vanderbilt, it'll be Zaire Williams. If it isn't Zaire Williams, it'll be Adut Diarra. If it isn't Adut Diarra, it'll be Jake LaRavia when he forgets how to shoot. If it isn't Jake LaRavia when he forgets how to shoot, like the Lakers just, they haven't allocated enough resources to have the perfect wing on their team, right? Jonathan Kuminga's shot comes and goes too. So like, there is no player on the Lakers roster right now who you would say, all right. And by the way, there are very few wings in the NBA period who fit the description of night in, night out. They defend like Jared Vanderbilt is capable of defending, but they also knock down shots. Those players make $40, $50 million a year. You're talking about OG Anunoby. You're talking about Mikal Bridges. Like not even Trey Murphy or Herb Jones can say that, right? They might, like Herb Jones gets after it defensively, but his shot comes and goes. Trey Murphy is an absolute sniper from the perimeter, but his defense comes and goes. So like what I'm asking of the coaching staff, specifically with Jared Vanderbilt, and it's like, figure it out, get creative, get more out of this guy, because you don't have the optimized version of that player at that position on your team, even if you traded for Kuminga. So yeah, I'm happy to see. And also like, it also needs to be said here, with so much in flux, with so many players leaving and entering the fray and everybody figuring so many things out, and with this team being as young as it is, Jared Vanderbilt is absolutely critical, I think, to the Lakers locker room. He is one of the most universally respected players in the NBA, in terms of his locker room presence, what guys think of him as a dude in the NBA. And I think that is something that is going to matter this season. You know, the Lakers don't have a roster spot to just dedicate to their version of Udonis Haslam or Jared Dudley or Kevin Love or whoever. Like, Jared Vanderbilt is probably going to have to be that guy. And he absolutely gets after it on the court. He's the first guy to step to dudes if they act out of line. He also, remember last season, stepped in between Luka and JJ Redick when they were ready to kill each other. So it's I think he's really important to the Lakers culture. I think he's really important to their defense because they just don't have enough of it to just say go away to Vando. I look at his production next season as a key growth point for a coaching staff who, to this point, I think too quickly gives up on players. All right, let's see. Where are we at? I think we're good here. Yeah? No? Maybe so? Let's see. I think that's it. Cool. I don't know. So, like, I've noticed this trend too, Sporadic. I'm not picking on you specifically, but like Sporadic writes, if we had one of those wings talking about like the Bridges, Anunoby, whatever, Lakers fans would complain they paid too much or try to trade him for Cam Thomas or some mediocre player. I've noticed this trend where, because I've heard that, you know, and Trevor and I caught up over the weekend, and Jovan and I obviously talk regularly. Like, the three of us aren't really over the moon over like how this offseason has gone. I've seen that, like, you know, Twitter in general is kind of iffy about this offseason. And I think a lot, like, what I've noticed is in my mentions and in the comments and stuff like this, you know, there's this desire to just be like, oh, well, you would have hated anything. And it's like, no, like, I didn't hate the Lakers trading for Luka. I didn't hate the Lakers trading for Anthony Davis. Like, I, there are things that the Lakers have done that I liked, and there are things that the Lakers have done that I didn't like. And as I've said several times over on the show, Rob Pelinka and I just don't see eye to eye from a ideological standpoint about the game of basketball. He looks at everything through the prism of buckets and scoring. And I look at everything through the prism of like toughness and defense and culture and those things. And so what that leads to is oftentimes I don't like what Rob Pelinka does, but if he does do something like this plan, right? Given what the Lakers have in front of them, signing and trading for Jonathan Kuminga, you know, signing Matisse Thybulle, you know, getting something for Jaden Hardy and Dalton Connect, maybe converting Chris Mannion if you can open another roster spot, finding Arthur Kaluma and drafting Cam Carr and developing a Duke Hero, like, given what the Lakers have in front of them, given everything that it took to get Walker Kessler and given all the money that they gave to Mamu and to Quentin Grimes, like, this is about as good a plan to address some of those weaknesses in the roster as could be devised. So, like, with that being the premise, I actually agree with a lot of what the Lakers are trying to do to wrap up their offseason. And I'll say that if I agree with something, I'll say it. If I don't agree with something, I'm going to say that too. And, I think that like fans get defensive over the things that their favorite team does because sports are supposed to provide feel good. And if people are knocking something that your team did, the instinct is to be like, oh shit, does that mean that we aren't going to be good? And that's going to impact your feel good. That's going to impact the viewing experience of next year's team. and so on and so forth. So I understand that defensive tendency, but I would also hope that like you kind of give people some grace to not necessarily agree with things that the Lakers do that they don't agree with. So, I think it the Danny Green death threats, he couldn't shoot as well with the Lakers. Not saying he deserved death threats over it, but like, the thing is, it's not just Lakers fans. It's not just LA fans. It's all sports fans nowadays because of the amount of information that we are privy to, contract numbers, trade values, trade proposals, rumors, the news cycle, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, podcasts, all these things. With all of the information out there, every sports fan base believes that their team should be able to win a championship. We just saw the New York Knicks win a championship. I never thought I would see that in my lifetime. I talked to Andrew Claudio, who is the producer for and host for or one of the hosts for Knicks Film School. Saw him in Vegas, and we were talking, over the weekend about like how incredible it is that the Knicks of all teams won a championship. And so everybody holds their team to a really high standard. And as such, what you're kind of left with is sometimes unhappy fans. And also because social media is a competitive environment, everybody is like competing for eyeballs on their tweets. And the louder that somebody gets in their angst over a player's performance, the likelier it is that their tweet gets seen. So like, trust me, I know what it's like to have people compete over how much they can hate a person. Look at my mentions on any given day. And that's like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of what these guys deal with. So I wish that it wasn't the case. I wish that social media was a more positive environment, but it's not just Lakers fans. It's not just like the people who cover the Lakers who haven't loved the Lakers offseason. I don't know. I guess the point here is just like be nicer to each other, you know, like give people some grace. And if they disagree with you, like have a productive conversation. That's what I love. I've loved Discord about as much as any platform that I've been involved with, because at any time, if it starts to get personal, I can just kind of pop in there and say like, guys, don't make me turn this car around. And there's an apology, there's a productive conversation, and everybody kind of moves on. And so like, I don't know, more of that is what I'm asking for. We got a super comment during that monologue. Here we go. Drew Gallegos writes, Lawrence Frank calls, offers Derek Jones Jr. for Vando and DK plus 2 seconds, but asks that you make your channel the Clippers Lounge. What do you say? No, I wouldn't, because the Clippers don't have as big an audience and it would cost me money. So sorry, everybody. all right, here's what I would do. Better answer, Drew. Here's what I would honestly do. I would say, okay, sure, Frank or Lawrence. You have two first names. I'm going to do a shady thing since you are the Clippers and you are a shady organization. It's the Clippers Lounge. But we pop in here into the Clippers Lounge every day and we laugh at the Clippers. And then we discuss the Lakers. And it would be like an ironic naming of the Clippers Lounge. So now Lakers fans get Derrick Jones Jr. I don't lose money. And we all get to laugh at the Clippers. How about that? All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn in like button, subscribe button, turn on notifications for the channel and for YouTube. Please check out Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA to get $50 worth of free Prize Picks lineups. When you sign up, use the promo code and make a $5 lineup of your own. Subscribe to the podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere is perfectly fine with me. And until tomorrow, when Pete and I are going to catch up, have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you then.
Bye, everyone.